Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I'm your host today, Mike Keyes. How does the debate over how to treat mental illnesses relate to foundational issues about science that are relevant to the controversy over evolution and intelligent design? To help us think about this today, I've invited J.P. Moreland, distinguished professor of philosophy at Biola University, to talk about his new book, Finding Quiet, which was released in May 2019. Welcome, JP, to the show.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
So, JP, in 2003, you woke in the middle of the night to a severe panic attack.
Yes.
And although you had a history and upbringing that kind of made you predisposed to this, this was really a huge event for you. And since then, you've found ways to overcome these debilitating sources of anxiety and depression, and you wrote a book about it. So as we think about this in terms of the debate about evolution and intelligent design, we're obviously here at ID the Future thinking about a pro-design and an anti-materialistic perspective. We think that is what best makes sense of reality.
Yes.
So as you think about your book in relation to this orientation of our podcast in this venue, many people of faith are opposed to taking psychiatric drugs whatsoever for mental illness. And yet, and I know you legitimately criticize this overreaction, but what's the polar opposite problem of treating mental illness only with psychiatric drugs under the assumption that we're purely an evolved material system?
Thanks for asking that question. And number one, I just want to say to our listeners that if you're suffering, or if you know somebody who suffers from anxiety and depression, I am a fellow journeyer, fellow sufferer, and I can assure you that from my own experience, the practices and the ideas in my book, Finding Quiet, are fresh and new, and you probably have never heard of most of them before, but they work. And I would urge you to get a copy for anybody who's suffering. Now, to answer your question, evolutionary theory implies that we should be completely material beings. Darwin himself saw that to be true. And the reason is because evolution is a purely physical story about how purely physical processes, such as mutation and natural selection and genetic drift, how those change purely physical characteristics for reproductive advantage. So if evolution is how we got here, then we are very complicated bodies with extremely complicated organs and brains. You can't get mind from matter by simply rearranging matter into a new structure. If you rearrange matter, what you're going to end up with is rearranged matter.
Yeah, right.
But what we know is that people do not get well by simply taking medication to the degree that they do if they also engage in psychological and in spiritual practices. And this is because there is an immaterial component to us. We have a soul or a self. I don't want to get into the arguments for that right now, but there are many. But the point is that since that's true and we're conscious beings and consciousness is distinctively non-physical, then we can actually choose to direct our thinking in a different way, and that will change the structure of the brain. So neuroplasticity, the idea that the brain's structure is not frozen but can change over time, and one of the main ways that it can be changed is by choosing to think positive thoughts instead of thinking in the negative, fearful self-talk. If that's practiced in a certain way, it shows that mind can change matter. And if that's true, and there's no doubt that it is, then you've got to acknowledge that there are free agents that have the power to resist their anxiety episodes enough to think certain thoughts while they're having the anxiety, and that will eventually change their brain. That is not a set of facts that can be explained by evolutionary theory. Because if you say in the beginning were the particles, and the history of the world is just the rearrangement of particles according to natural law, there's not going to be any consciousness or any self. If you say in the beginning was the logos, then you have an explanation for how souls with consciousness could come about, because your fundamental entity is not a particle, but a divine conscious self or soul or spirit himself.
Okay, that's a great way to encourage many of our listeners who are Darwin doubters, but maybe not particularly religious, to at least consider the possibility of, if we are not the result of an unguided material process, then there may be a great mind behind everything that once we understand this and certain principles of the life of the mind, that it would affect the way we actually practice mental health. And so there's three episodes on this in the companion podcast series called Mind Matters, and our listeners might want to go there to get the details. But we're here thinking just about more big picture worldview questions and how consideration of mental health can be treated in a very different way if one has good reasons to doubt Darwin, which we think there are excellent reasons to doubt Darwin. And so your book is relevant in that regard.
Yes.
So continuing along this line about the importance of the mind in matters of science, you write that the soul, or the immaterial aspect of our human personhood, that the soul has thousands of capacities that are grouped into faculties. And the mental faculty, the mind includes our thoughts, and how we reason from certain thoughts, premises, to new thoughts, conclusions, which is important for science. So how is philosophical analysis, I mean, you are a philosopher, JP, how is philosophical analysis of the mental faculty important for understanding how science works? In other words, is materialistic philosophy, philosophy kind of as enlarging Darwinism into a whole worldview, is that ill-equipped to understand how science itself works? You've already told us it's ill-equipped to understand how mental health works, but how about science itself?
Well, it is ill-equipped, and I'll tell you why. Reasoning, processes of weighing evidence, drawing conclusions, and so on, has an ontology. In other words, if you give an analysis of acts of reasoning that people engage in, there is a certain set of reality things that have to be a part of it. For example, there has to be an agent or self that is able to direct the process of reasoning teleologically towards the end of finding a true or rational conclusion. So reasoning is teleological. Yeah. But matter does not behave teleologically. It's according to the materialist and Darwinist. In fact, one purpose of Darwinism was to get rid of teleology.
Right.
But reason is irreducibly teleological, because we engage in a process of reasoning in order to achieve a certain end, namely make a wise decision about what house to buy. So there has to be an agent that guides the process teleologically. The agent has to have free will, because he can't be determined in what conclusion he's going to draw prior to his process of deliberating.
Right.
So during the process, you choose to weigh this or to weigh that and to notice this entailment relation. So the point is that you can build a very, very good case that if materialistic determinism is true, there could be no such thing as rationality. Rationality presupposes an agent with a mind and with agency and teleology and normativity. Some conclusions you ought not draw, and others you ought if you're going to be rational. Matter, states of matter, aren't normative. They're not intrinsically normative. So science presupposes reasoning. But if science says everything is matter, it is self-refuting because it undermines the very thing it uses to reach the conclusion that materialism is true.
This sounds like this is intimately related to your other recent book called Scientism, JP.
Yes, it is.
So I'm glad that we can kind of bring these two books together because there are certain limits to what a worldview is capable of explaining well. And a materialistic worldview has severe limitations in making sense of how we deal with mental health successfully, which your book Finding Quiet deals with, and with making sense of science itself, how it works, which your other earlier book, Scientism, goes into detail on. So great, great stuff. I've got one concluding question, and you can add anything else after that. But although here at ID the Future, we obviously have a pro-design and anti-materialism position, this is not anti-matter. I mean, we know that there's a material aspect, and I know you go into this in your book. And incidentally, early Christians opposed the hyper-spirituality teachings of mystery religions known as Gnosticism. And these Christians argued that we shouldn't despise matter as the Gnostics did. Comment on this.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because our soul and our minds and spirits and wills and emotions, which are non-physical, are deeply integrated with our bodily organs, especially the brain and nervous system and the heart muscle. And what that means is that while we're a duality of material and immaterial, we are functionally a whole unit because they all function together and can affect each other. My thoughts can change my brain structure. If I have a bad brain structure, it can affect the way I think and my emotions and so on. So what this means is that we respect the importance of the brain and the nervous system and the heart muscle for maintaining mental health and getting rid of anxiety and depression. The brain and the heart play a role. So to attack and get rid of anxiety and depression, you have to do specific things with your mind, your will, your feelings, and your brain and heart muscle, and attack it holistically. And in Finding Quiet, I list a wide range of practices that really work and focus on the different aspects of the human person.
Excellent. Well, our listeners, if they want more detail, can go to the other series of podcasts at the website Mind Matters. But that concludes our conversation today, which was thinking more about how issues regarding mental health relate to the more foundational debate about evolution and intelligent design. I also encourage our listeners to go to Amazon to find J.P. Moreland's excellent book, Finding Quiet. And I might mention that J.P. has written, authored, edited, or contributed papers to about 100 plus books, including Scientism and Secularism, which we just talked about, of course, his Finding Quiet, and then also Naturalism, a Critical Analysis. So, thanks for joining us today. This is Mike Keyes with ID the Future.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.